Hey there, I'm Jeremy with Good Beer Matters. First, thank you for listening to the Good Beer Matters podcast, where we explore the craft and culture of beer. Second, I want to see the beer and hospitality industries improve so we can do a better job, make more money, and so guests can have exceptional experiences. Good Beer Matters is dedicated to the pros and enthusiasts in the beer industry because we are the ones who will make it better. To that end, I want to invite you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter where I share perspectives on beer, styles, pairing, and some practical beer education. Go to goodbeermatters.net to subscribe. My name is Jeremy, and this is Good Beer Matters.
The whole point of the craft beer movement from day one was to get more people drinking really interesting, fun beer. I think once you get the advanced, it starts to become a little less clear.
Once we get more people to become advanced cicerones, because that then we get more people at the table who are creative and who are going to say, you know what, how come we've never thought about doing it this way?
We recently finished off graduation season, and speakers at these ceremonies often talk about education as the doorway to better opportunities and experiences. Is this also true in beer? Does a higher beer education deliver on the promise of opportunity and experience? My next guest and I discuss this question and how we're trying to answer it. We find great experiences at the intersection of craft and culture. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. For the craft and culture of beer, this is episode 129 of Good Beer Matters with Advanced Cicerones and Beer Scholar team, Chris Cohen and Scott Fielder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, late morning, wherever you are in the world listening to this. This one I'm particularly excited about because instead of just being the interviewer, I get to be like part of the conversation as well. So I'm going to call today's Good Beer Matters podcast is more of a panel, and I'm sitting on the panel as well as talking about it because I've got with me two advanced cicerones that are also trying to put out better education into the world and level up, on-premise, off-premise, beer sales, distributors, anyone who works with beer. We can and we need to do a better job. And today we're going to talk about how we can do that better job. Fellas, welcome to the Good Beer Matters podcast.
Yeah, stoked to be here, Jeremy.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So I'm going to start, Chris, I'm going to start with you. Will you, for the two or three people out there that haven't heard your name in the beer industry, will you please introduce yourself and let us know, what you do within the beer industry?
Yeah. So my name is Chris Cohen. I guess my primary claim to fame is, that I launched Beer Scholar, the company Beer Scholar, back in 2014, which at that time was for many years was the only study material on the market for the Cicerone exams. Since then I also opened a bar in San Francisco, called Old Devil Moon. I founded the San Francisco Homebrewers Guild. I'm a national BJCP judge. I've been invited to judge like the Great American Beer Festival, stuff like that. So yeah, I've been all about education with Beer Scholar, and then with my bar, I really try to put that into practice, you know, with like what I would like to say is one of the best beer programs in San Francisco, at least. So we just sadly shut Old Devil Moon down about 6 months ago, but we had this awesome curation. We had this awesome service. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I miss it, but it is what it is. Pandemic difficulties and all that. But anyway, so I'm back to Beer Scholar pretty much full time at this point, which is very exciting.
And how long has Beer Scholar been around?
2014. So the crazy thing is I've been doing beer education for almost a decade.
Great. And that's perfect. We're going to dive into that. And then Scott, will you do the same? Please introduce yourself and who you are and what you're doing.
Yeah. My name is Scott Fielder. I'm an advanced Cicerone. I'm a provisional BJCP judge. I'm taking my tasting exam in a couple of months, so hoping that that goes well. I'm very early on in my beer journey. Had a 2011 Rodenbach vintage in 2018 that me and my friends all thought were going to be horrible because you are not supposed to be able to age beer, and we opened it, and that set me on a path that I could never have imagined, and that's kind of where I find myself now. I've always been drawn to the beer education space, especially after using Beer Scholar to help pass the certified exam, level two of the Cicerone program. And it's something that I really got into doing, especially once the pandemic hit. I started doing a lot of, once everybody figured out how to use Zoom, I thought, let's just do some cheese and chocolate pairing with beer. And that was a really fun project to kind of dive into. And then once I got my advance, Chris obviously saw what, you know, what I did with the study group and all of their help and all of us passing the exam, that it was a no-brainer to kind of partner with him and to come onto the Beer Scholar team.
Yeah, yes. Well, let's talk about that study group real quick, because for whatever reason, you reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to join us? And that was perfect timing, because I think from when I took that tasting exam and from when I signed up for it, I had 2 months to knock all the rust off of my taste buds and beer styles and everything. And so that was just like a, frankly, kind of a sprint, and your timing was perfect. But what I learned is, you know, you guys had been going for over a year, if I remember right, but you guys were meeting weekly. You guys were diving into the styles, you guys were diving into pairings, and it was, frankly, it was a bit intense. And I really appreciated your invite to that group. But, you know, you and I took that test on the same day in the same place. We passed it. The other people that were part of that group have subsequently passed it. Anyudeep Mujala, that was on this podcast, the first advanced Cicerone in India, was part of that group. And so we're having conversations with people around the world in Guam, India, LA, I think Arizona at the time, now Idaho. But you brought people together to learn how to study for this monster of a test and learn this ridiculous amount of beer knowledge and put through it. And so now you're actually taking that experience you have and trying to help other people do the same thing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's the reason I reached out to you. I was like, we just want to help people pass the exam. If people were willing to come in and do the intense work that it takes, all the work that it takes, because our group was a lot larger when we started. And then when we brought on, you know, master Cicerones to help us with stuff and to, you know, do education for us and help us prepare for, you know, all the, you know, we basically had someone do all five sections of the syllabus, do like a 3-hour lesson, kind of just doing a huge deep dive. There were people who were like, I just thought we were going to kind of talk about beer and hang out and it was going to be more casual and I will no longer be attending the group anymore. Which was great. That's kind of what we were hoping. That's what we wanted. It got dwindled down to about 5 or 6 of us, you know, that were showing up pretty regularly. And all of us, 5 of us have taken the full exam. 1 person has taken the tasting and the oral exams, and nobody has failed any portion of the exam, who studied with the group from beginning to end. And the hard part about it is that we did make a lot of mistakes, along the way, but, you know, now we know, we have a good idea of how to pass this thing. We have a really good idea of how to study for it. We have a really good idea of how to save people a lot of time in terms of taking that exam. And, you know, like you, I had 7 weeks. I had 7 weeks for the tasting exam that I had to. And I was like, well, we just have to do tasting pretty much every day. And I think I kept track. I think I did like 220 samples in 7 weeks.
Oh, you were a beast.
Scott is a beast.
He's a beast. You don't go half-assed on anything, but I assume you don't post everything that you do on Instagram, but your Instagram page is yet. Yeah. We're doing another panel today. And frankly, I love that with that group, it goes along with the first rule of pairing is you need to match intensities. And so if you have some people that are like, yeah, hey, let's sit here for 2 hours, crack some jokes, drink four beers, and you know, maybe talk about Kolsch if we get around to it. That was not that group. We want to pass this thing. We want to climb that mountain, and we want to be successful. And I, for one, am grateful that I was a part of that for when I was. So now, now the two of you have combined Beer Scholar and your experiences to kind of take that next step of match those intensities. Tell us about that that kind of partnership.
So Scott reached out to me.
Hey there, it's me, Jeremy again. I forgot to mention that I also have a podcast with my dear friend, the incredible Julia Herz. Together, we've created the Sense of Beer Style podcast. It's the essential training for those who want to lead in food and beverage. We've created prepisodes to cover foundational beer knowledge, as well as Stylecast to walk you through each category of the 2021 BJCP Beer Style Guidelines. If you work with beer as part of your job, then subscribe and listen so you can become an authority. Go to senseofbeerstyle.com to subscribe.
The way we met is Scott reached out to me to ask if I would join the study group as sort of a teacher, because I had already passed the advanced exam a couple years prior. And I was just starting to try to rebuild Beer Scholar. And I was also focused like very intensely on kind of like saving my bar during COVID. So I was like, I just don't have the bandwidth. But, you know, I'll come to some of the sessions and just sort of hang out, throw some advice in there if I can. Truthfully, I was also kind of like, hey, it's been a few years for me. Like, I'm a little rusty. Like, I could actually come to these and probably learn a little bit myself. So it was self-serving in that regard as well. But I started going to these sessions, these study sessions that Scott was putting together. And I was like, you know, this guy is a beast. Like you mentioned, like he's so dialed. And he's so focused, and he's putting together essentially the study program for the advanced exam. And, you know, kind of doing a service almost for this whole study group. Not that he didn't have some help from other members, but, you know, I could just see that he was basically building like this program that I thought was like something we should do at Beer Scholar. You know, people have been asking me for many, many years. Like, I get emails pretty regularly, like, when are you going to have a study guide out for, or an online course for the advanced exam? And the reality is, as you know, Jeremy, I think it's just too much information to do as like some kind of, you know, pre-recorded lessons, right? Mm-hmm. Even level two is a lot to do that for, but level three is pretty much impossible. So, but I was seeing that Scott was doing this awesome study group and putting together this whole program. And so after he had passed, I connected with him and I said, hey, you know, do you want to maybe work together on something like this for Beer Scholar? So we've been working for many, many months, at more than many months, to put together this really awesome advanced Cicerone kind of coaching program that we'll be releasing in the not too distant future.
Well, and we'll dive into the why and wherewithal in a little bit. But one of the things I wanted to flesh out, it's, you know, so from my experience, you know, I many, many, many years ago, I was an organ paramedic, and the training for beer and paramedicine is completely different. So I'm not going to make that equation, but the testing process, I thought the process of becoming a certified Cicerone was about on par with becoming a paramedic. I was a little surprised with that. And maybe becoming a paramedic, maybe it should be a little bit harder. You know, sorry for anyone out there who's training right now. It's a very worthwhile career, but the testing of it was just very like, let's just, you know, run through the mill. Let's just kind of, you know, we've been trained how to pass the test in paramedicine. Whereas with certified Cicerone, you had to know it and you had to show it. But then along comes Advanced Cicerone, and each of these levels has just been a giant exponential leap. And Advanced Cicerone was just one of those just monsters of a test where one of my favorite things that I love to tell people is on the written test, they just give you a bunch of numbers. Here's the ABV, the IBU, the SRM, the whatever. And you have to just from those numbers, oh, that's the alt beer. That's definitely the alt beer. Right. You can't fake it. There's no multiple choice. Not really. You have to know the stuff inside and out, backwards and forwards. What was your experience? Both of you, Scott, I'll have you go first. What was your experience going through the Advanced Cicerone testing process?
It was very interesting because there was not really anyone we could get any sort of advice on, because we started studying when it was still under the impression that once COVID was, you know, kind of over, or we could start getting back together in person, that they would just start doing in-person exams again, because, you know, it used to be that you did everything in one day. You had a morning session, you had lunch, and then you did everything again in the afternoon, and it was split. But now they had started to move it on into this online format, and nobody had really taken it, or nobody that we had really, you know, known of. I think there was maybe one person who was kind of passively in our group that was in like the beta test version, where they just said like, hey, you were signed up and then COVID hit, so now we're going to let you take the first one that we're going to do because you already paid. Or if people didn't want to, I think they could get a refund. But it was interesting trying to do it with, you know, having to understand like, okay, I have to look at this camera and do it online, and this program is going to like shut down everything that's on my computer. And so it was just totally different than, you know, anything I had done up to that point in the Cicerone program. It was really nice that they split up everything. And so once they did that, it was like, cool, we can just hyper focus on the written exam now. We can put off tasting for a little bit. We had practiced it a bunch, so it's not like we were going to be totally out of practice once we picked it back up. But that was a really nice, you know, part of it.
That was a gift. I got to interject and say that was a gift when they separated out, so you could just really focus on what we needed to know. Sorry, Chris, I know you did it the good old-fashioned way, but oh my God, the COVID version of testing was an absolute gift.
No, I took the second one they ever gave. The second exam they ever gave in Oakland, and they had done it the previous weekend for the first time ever in Chicago. And nobody knew what to expect. Like, there was no one to ask advice for in terms of, you know, what exactly was going to be tested or what sort of depth of knowledge you needed to know the stuff to or anything. So I really went in there blind, I'll be honest.
And so, what was your experience, Chris, of taking the test? Was it just as intense, or do you think it's evolved over time?
So it's definitely evolved over time. I know a lot of people who have taken it and passed, and obviously we all, you know, we chat. So yeah, I know that it has changed a bit. I actually, and I don't mean to talk trash here, I think part of them dialing it in was making certain sections of it easier, particularly the tasting. I think, you know, that when they were doing the second one ever, they just hadn't quite figured out what level, maybe what kind of beers to use and stuff like that. So very few people passed. I had to retake the tasting myself. I don't feel bad saying that, but, it was very difficult. And I think, and maybe it hasn't gotten much, changed significantly, but there's just, it's kind of like with the certified back in the day. It's like, there's just, it's a little less mysterious now because people have taken it. You can actually get some advice from people who've passed it. If you have some friends in the industry who know, who have passed it, you can like talk to them and get some info. That wasn't the case, you know, when I did it.
Yeah. To me, it seems almost like the 4-minute mile. As soon as someone cracks that code, then everyone goes, oh, that's how you do it. And I remember, I don't recall who told me the story, and I'm not certain if it's absolutely true, but, the story that's floating around out there is the one of the first people to pass the master Cicerone test, was purported to have a photographic memory and so passed. And of course they thought, so that's the bar we're going to set. And everyone else has been like clamoring to try and get up to it, which is why there's only 22 of them in the world. Yeah. Have you guys heard that story?
I've not heard that story, but the numbers are ridiculous.
Yeah, I've heard that story. And with the stories that I've heard from Cohen, and now with trying to prepare for the master exam, it seems like they were trying to think, okay, what can we take from the master exam that we already have and put it into the advanced exam that we're now creating and maybe trying to figure out? Because even now, it feels like there are certain questions that you get, and it's like, that feels like either AC plus or master level, and also questions that were like, when I was studying for certified, that would have been an easy question.
Yeah.
You know, if I was level one. So I think they eventually kind of made it where it was a good mix, but there were definitely things that I kind of heard and I was like, that sounds like something that they probably did on the master exam that they brought down to the AC level. And then probably, like Chris said, probably realized after the first couple, they were like, maybe that's a little too difficult. Maybe we need to back off on that.
I'll just say, after my advanced, I went and hung out with one of the master cicerones who was a friend of mine who had proctored it. And that person was like essentially in agreement that the tasting exam was so hard that they might not have passed it.
Was this in San Francisco?
This was in the Bay Area. Yeah.
Okay.
So I would just say, like, generally speaking, you know, the pass rates for a lot of these tests are kind of shockingly low. Like for the CC, it used to be, I believe, in the 20% pass range. And then when I've put out my Beer Scholar material, it bounced up and now it's hovering below, like, I think somewhere just below 40%, whereas the advanced Cicerone exam, I believe, is right around 10%, which is obviously abysmal. And I really think, you know, kind of like I mentioned before, it's just like this demystification. Once more information gets out there, you know, then people just know how to take the test and how to prep for it. So.
Well, and I wasn't paying that close attention before Scott and I passed, but afterwards, I think Scott and I had a conversation about we were going to squeak in right under the 150 mark, and Scott was like, "Well, what number do you want to be?" I was like, "Oh, I don't care. This dude is driven; he's a beast."
I want 145. I was like, "There's five of us who can pass in Colorado. I want 145."
And since that time, now there's like 165. So there's been like 15 other people that have passed since then. And it was almost like the announcements came out. It was just like, wow, someone really cracked the code, because now it's easy. Now there's a bunch of people passing, but it's really not. It just seemed that way because I started paying attention to it.
Yeah. And if you think about it, so the test came out basically 7 years ago, right? Less than 170 people have passed. But I do think you're seeing, you know, like the hockey stick is starting, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Scott and I have the goal of like making that hockey stick thing happen. So
yeah, you're going to force Cicerone to make that test even harder. So, you know,
I don't know about that. I think that if the pass rate goes from 10% to 20%, that would be perfectly fine with everybody. I hope.
Well, so let's talk about, I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. Let's talk about, okay, so, you know, those people who do pass the test, who do move on, you know, I've talked to people, there's a friend of mine near where I live who, she's working on getting her master in wine. And when I asked her about it, she was just like, that's my Everest. I need to climb it because it's their type of mentality. And I've talked to master cicerones, And they've mentioned that, you know, there's not an obvious thing. It's a lot more esoteric about why you would become a master cicerone. There aren't jobs just waiting for someone to pass their master cicerone and say, hey, here you go, here's your high paying job. We need you to come in and do this for us. That doesn't exist, at least in the beer world that I'm aware of. Not yet. Right. If it is, someone get a hold of me quick. You know, just kidding. But the way that it's kind of broken out, they talk about the certified beer server is just great for people working in the industry, so that you know more than your average customer.
It's the minimum level that anyone who serves or sells beer should be at, because if you can't speak at least, you know, on that level with your customers, I mean, then your customer probably knows more than you do about beer, and that is not good.
And yeah, if you're trying to sell a product, you should know your product better than your customer. Yes. And the certified Cicerone, they talked about, these are people who are next level up in their profession. They're going to be sales or distribution, whatever that may be, yep, kind of leadership. Yep. But advanced Cicerone kind of sits in this spot it's in between the esoteric world of I've got too much knowledge and this. Yeah. World of like, okay, I can really apply this and help you level up your game. Where do you see advanced Cicerone sitting in that world?
I think the ROI on the certified is very clear to people in the industry. Mm-hmm. Your breweries know what to do with you. Like, you can speak really intelligently about beer. You've shown that you are kind of a go-getter, that you have passion for beer, that you know a lot about it. You're going to go out there and be able to speak to consumers or customers, depending what sort of business you do, you're going to be able to speak to them very intelligently about beer. And I think breweries really understand that. Breweries and distributors and other beer industry, companies. I think once you get the advanced, it starts to become a little less clear to them. And I think the industry doesn't exactly know what to do with us. A lot of us are people. You mentioned someone who is doing the master for wine psalm stuff. And for them, it's just this Everest that they need to climb because it's there and because they have that level of passion about wine. And I think that's true in beer too. But like you said, when you get that master of wine, like, there are all these wineries lined up to hand you $250,000 a year jobs. And that just does not happen in the beer world, right? I mean,
nope.
And it's really unfortunate. I think that, I'm not suggesting that necessarily breweries should be lining up to pay a ton for master Cicerones, but I do think mostly people just don't know what to do with us, right? Like, it is almost too esoteric. And I think a lot of us are blazing our own paths, and it's kind of exciting to see. A lot of us do education work. I know a few advanced and master Cicerones who work for bigger breweries doing education mm-hmm. work, and I think that's super important. I think that's incredibly important. I think that's a thing that advanced and master Cicerones are definitely like cut out for. That's, we have that passion to learn, to keep going and going, and we want to spread that knowledge. At least that's my take, having met a lot of them. And so I do think education is a great area for us to be in. I'm like as interested in talking about this and hearing from other people as anyone else out there, because I do think that there is a lot of sort of lack of clarity on this. What are we being trained for exactly, right?
Yeah. What do you think, Scott?
I think the sort of psalm world has set a really bad precedent about what because it's just really, it's really easy. And that's how we explain what Cicerone is to people who don't know the program, right? Do you know what a psalm is? It's like that, but for beer. Like, that's the elevator pitch for what a Cicerone is. And the hard part is we see in these documentaries or people, that they are just getting handed these jobs. And so it's like, oh, well, if that happens for them, then it happens for, for Cicerones too. But, also there's just different requirements, to be a psalm. The program's very different. I looked into it before I decided to go the advanced Cicerone route. And it's just sort of set a weird precedent that is not the case right now. And the Cicerone program is still young. It's still in its infancy. And so for me, part of it is that we are blazing a new path, that we are probably 30 years from now going to be cranky about the fact that people are getting jobs because they have level two right out of the gate. And that wasn't the case for us. And I'm totally fine doing that. That's something I'm willing to be a part of and to do. And for me, I've tried to look at it as, rather than waiting for somebody to hand me a job or something, what can I create? What can I, what is like something like Beer Scholar, or what is something, like whatever it is, what can you go out and, now that you have this knowledge, what can you create? And the people who I've seen that do that really well are people who get into a position where they are a bridge. There are two parties, mm-hmm. whether they're a part of the same company or even within the same company, brewery, whatever it is, and they don't know how to talk to each other, or they're just not able to talk to each other. You know, the classic one is the brewers that work in the morning. Their shift is from 6 a.m., you know, till 2 p.m. and they're brewing. And then, you know, the breweries may be open for a couple of hours while they're there, but it's not busy. And then the people who are serving it, the language that they use and even just how they pronounce their styles of beers are different. You know, I can't tell you how many places are brewing German lagers where, you know, you hear the founder of the brewery saying, this is our Weiss beer. And then, you know, I go into the brewery and they're like, hey, we have a Hefeweizen. And it's like, those are two like really different ways to talk about that beer. One of them, you know, being a very good way and the other one, not my preferred method of pronouncing that word. But just how can you be a bridge for those two things? The other one that I had personal, experience with is a brewery that really wanted to partner with a restaurant to do a pairing dinner. And the brewery knew how to talk about beer and the chef knew how to talk about food, but they just did not know how to connect in the middle. And so they talked to me and I was like, that's it. Like, that's what we can do. We know just enough about food and we know a ton about beer. And so we can help to translate. We can help to make sure these people get into the room and then know how to talk to each other and kind of get them started and be a, sort of that like Cicerone. We can be that guide. We can be that person who can help that experience become all that much better because now these two people are actually working on the same wavelength and that's just going to create a better experience. And so for me, it's figuring out where can we fit into those places where those bridges are needed.
It kind of reminds me of that movie that came out in the 90s, High Fidelity with John Cusack, where
one of my favorite movies of all
right?
time.
Great movie. Yes. But they said, you know, you are the underappreciated scholars of, you know, whatever. And it's just, and here are these guys who know absolutely everything there is to know about music, but they're working in a record shop, not knowing what to do with this knowledge. That's us. I think that's us. We are the underappreciated scholars of the beer world. But I don't want to work in a record shop. I've got kids to feed and buy cars for and send to college and stuff like that. Yeah. So, you know, record shop is cool, but back then, and they don't even exist anymore now, but, I see with some of the work that I do, I'm taking a parallel path. I think, you guys are focusing on those people who want to become Cicerones and apply that. I'm trying to, work on people in the service industry to help them level up their game. And I think that knowledge that we bring, that training for others that we bring is clear, but what isn't clear is the ROI to people who, may or not spend that money. Talk to me a little bit about the value of bringing this education to the industry and where that value really lies. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. The ROI is, I think, really clear. It's just that it's long-term, right? It's kind of medium long-term. And that in our sort of, you know, fast-paced kind of our system, especially for service companies, bars and restaurants that have these like razor thin margins. I know all about this because, you know, I owned a bar. And it's like, the ROI is clear. You train your staff, they know a lot about beer. You're hiring passionate people who want to learn more. They're having really interesting conversations with your customers. You develop a reputation for being a great place for beer and people have these wonderful experiences there over and over. They're recommending the place to their friends. You know, I mean, this is, I think, very obvious. I guess the question then is, well, what is the cost of doing that? And I would love to see that cost become quite low. I know that hiring an advanced Cicerone may not be the affordable option, you know, for getting your staff trained up. I don't really know exactly what the answer is. I certainly think that, online courses are a great way to make this a simple process, and doing staff training work is something that I've thought about doing more with Beer Scholar, you know, if I get beyond just training people for the Cicerone exams. But I think anyone who's touching beer, anyone who's handing a beer to a consumer, anyone who is trying to sell beer for a distributor or a brewery, if they're lacking that basic knowledge, not only are you missing an opportunity to create an experience for somebody else, but you're also actually, instead of building your reputation over time, you're actually damaging your reputation, I would suggest. You know, yeah. I've had salespeople from breweries walk into my brewery bar, and I certainly don't ever expect anyone to like know more about beer than me. But if you're coming in to sell me beer and you can't talk about it at an even level, that says shame something about your whole organization, I think.
Red flag, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Scott, before I chime back in?
I was going to say, I don't really know if I have all that much more to add, Chris, once he said that it's really a long-term, it's a thing that you are building over time. And I think hiring people who are Cicerones and advanced Cicerones, what you do is you are putting yourself in a good place to have a really good foundation. And then after that, to me, what I've realized is just like, we've got to start thinking a little bit more outside the box. I didn't, when I started studying, I just thought I'm just trying to figure out how to work in a brewery. I mean, there are breweries mm-hmm. here that I want to work for that if they have all of my cover letters from when I started falling in love with beer, like when I started studying for CBS, they got a cover letter for the next job they posted after I passed that. Same thing I plan on taking level two, so on and so forth, and just never a response. That was because I was just looking I was just like hyper-focused, like this is so I can work in a brewery. And now I am like not as actively looking to do that because I'm thinking maybe there's just something different that I need to be thinking about that I couldn't have imagined before. And I have to be open to lots of different possibilities. I think everyone's just like, you have to have it all figured out right now. For all the Cicerones, all the advanced, we just have to figure it all out right now. And I think we're just still on the journey doing that. And we will figure it out more and more and more. Especially the good thing is once we get more people to become advanced Cicerones, which is why this, Beer Scholar coaching program is so exciting, is that then we get more people at the table who are creative and who are going to say, you know what, how come we've never thought about doing it this way? Or how come we've never thought about doing this? And we're all just going to think, man, if we would have done that 10 years ago, we would have just been in a better place now. But so
I think it all comes back around to like building a culture, right? You want to hire people who are certified Cicerones or advanced Cicerones or whatever, and empower them to do some education and to do some staff training. That's something that's a skill that those folks are going to bring to your organization that probably other people don't have there. So I think that's very important. It's about building a culture over time.
It seems to me from, I've spent lots of time in and out of restaurants for my entire career. It seems to me that, there's a big difference. And I put an article in the New Brewer in the, I think it was the March, June issue. And it talked about this. And I really wanted to really point this out. And forgive me for anyone listening or watching. I don't mean this to be self-serving. It's important to me that this information gets out into the world. But, I have this theory that, servers, and we've all been there. And many of us working in a restaurant for the first time are just because we need the flexibility because we're going to school or we don't know what else to do or whatever it may be, and that's totally 100% fine. But while you're there, why not make better tips? Why not learn a skill set that you can apply elsewhere? Why not make yourself more valuable while you're doing it? And the mentality that I want to get across is that mentality of the gopher versus the guide. Yes. Anytime we go into a restaurant, you have that person walks up your table. What can I get you to drink? What can I take your order now? And they do an excellent job because they take your order, they put in the order, and in a short while, they deliver your food to the table. And in 2 minutes, how's everything tasting? Great. Let me know if you need anything. That is that's a gopher. They did a good job because they did what they're supposed to do. What I'm talking about is being a table guide. What I'm talking about is guiding someone through the process of This is just a beer. That's just a steak. Let's make that amazing. Here's how.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it, first of all, I linked to your article in my six pack newsletter.
Oh, right.
I thought it was a great article. I love the analogy, and it speaks to something that I thought about before I opened my bar, which was essentially, I've always taken the position that anything I'm going to do with my life basically is something I'm going to be at least somewhat passionate about, and that I'm going to try to be very good at, right? Whether it's service, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I knew when I opened Old Devil Moon that I wasn't going to hire like a college kid who just was like doing something like service on the side, you know, to be a gopher style server mm-hmm. on the side of like, just to try to have money for college or something. I hired people who were passionate about beer and who were going to contribute to this like culture of being a guide in your, to put it in your terms at Old Devil Moon. And I think, you know, it served us really well. We had at one point me, an advanced Cicerone, and then I think we maxed out at four. I can't remember if it was four or five other certified Cicerones, but like almost everybody there. And it was pretty epic. Like I wonder if we have more Cicerones than almost any other like tap room in the world. And anybody who came there who wanted to talk about the really cool list of beer that we were putting on that was different than the lists at all the other places where it was just like mostly IPAs and then, you know, whatever hype stuff they could get. Ours was like really curated in a special way. And our beer tenders could really talk to customers about it because customers were coming in and they didn't know what these beers were, right? Like, remember when sours first started becoming popular and you had to like really like talk about them and explain it to people. And I guess now that craft beer isn't quite peaking the way that it was a few years ago, I think the general education level among consumers and servers has probably gone up a tick, you know? But I certainly remember in the early sort of 20 teens when people had no information, super low information.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask this question, then Scott, I'll go to you, but that's a perfect little segue to this. Going to my guide versus gopher analogy, that you see that all over and you have a lot of bars that we want to have a great beer list, but if the servers and the bartenders and the staff don't know the beers, they don't know how to sell the beers, then you have a lot of beers just sitting there collecting dust and becoming fantastic paperweights. That doesn't serve anyone any good. And that doesn't serve you, the bar owner, doesn't serve me, the guest, doesn't serve Scott, the server, you know, or whoever it may be. But there's, you know, one of the other things I talked about in that article that I want to get your perspective on, this is where that question's coming, is I see the state of going out and having a meal, prices have gone up, but the service, the quality has kind of stayed the same. The knowledge isn't there, but I don't know about you guys, but I sit at home and I'm watching Chef's Table, you know, Top Chef. We as a society watch these shows that show us how great it can be and mm-hmm. how accessible it is to get there and kind of resetting our bar on what it is just to make the world's greatest pizza, for example. But there's still that gap between what we're seeing on TV, what we're learning, what we're experiencing, and what we're actually getting for it. What is your take on that state of that industry?
Oh gosh. Do I have a take on that? For me personally, here's how I've responded to that. That's what's coming to mind here. Is that the more and more I have gone out, you know, to eat and tried to, you know, have a good dining experience, and with how much I had to start and because I, you know, for medical reasons chose to really like hunker down during COVID and not go anywhere, I started cooking a lot. And there's just stuff I don't order at restaurants anymore because I'm like, this just seems like highway robbery.
Like, it's gotta be Ron Swanton.
Pancakes has just gotta be number one. Like anybody who pays $15 for pancakes, you're just being robbed. It's just ridiculous how easy it is to, you know what I mean? And so I've realized that I can do it. So what I would say to people is start trying to do it more yourself. If you've got even a little bit of time, try doing that for yourself. It's great. You know, it's easy to do. And then, you know, start doing it and pairing it with beer and realizing how great it is. And for me also, when I go to places, I've started asking if I can just bring in beer for, you know, a cork fee. That's the other thing too. I'm just trying to get it into places, and, you know, wait staff seem to be interested. A lot of them are just like, okay, wait a minute. Like, what is this Cicerone thing? Why are you wanting to bring in a bottle of beer? Why are there, you know, large bottles of beer? Like, most people are just like, oh, there's 750s of beer. I didn't realize, you know, they're just thinking Bud Light comes in a 750. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
And I thought about doing that too, because I am that guy but bringing $100 bottle of Camus with a $15 corkage fee versus a $15-$20 bottle of Grand Cru with a $15 corkage fee, that's the challenge I have with that. So I haven't even gone there yet, but I like where your head's at.
I just want to throw this in. Yeah. So, okay. We've got this nation full of people who are watching these shows, basically I think it's fair to say for certain, like I'd say for the most part, Americans feel like they're all a bunch of foodies now. Right. Also, I don't expect everyone to have the same interests as me, right? Like, I'm not surprised that other people don't know basic things about beer, right? People choose their passion, and you only have room for so many of them, right? Like, maybe you're into wine, maybe you're into whiskey, maybe you don't care about any of that. I don't know. But that's just, I think, makes the point about why it's so important that there are people like us involved with these organizations. Everybody feels like they are a bit of a foodie. I think they're open to learning about beer, at least on a basic level. And this is where I want to throw in just a comment about gatekeeping in the beer world. It has been my goal since the day I started doing beer education to just, I don't think I've ever done an interview or, you know, a lesson for a group where I didn't say, you know, that the whole point of what we're doing here is to welcome people in and to create a cool experience for them so that they enjoy beer more. The whole point of the craft beer movement from day one was to get more people drinking really interesting, fun beer. And so don't ever be a gatekeeper, anyone who's listening, you know, welcome people in, share the knowledge that you have, and do it in a way that provides people with an experience that makes them, you know, love beer more.
Yeah. We can take a lot of lessons from the world of wine in both what to do and what not to do. And hopefully the good parts of what wine has done ahead of us in the beer world, hopefully we will follow suit, because I do believe we're on that precipice where we've got 10,000 breweries. You know, it used to be that all you needed was color and flavor in your beer, and we're slapping high fives and rolling in the dough. These days it has to be good. It has to be better than good. And everyone's got good beer. Everyone has cornhole. Everyone has a bowl out, you know, for your dog.
It used to be like, I'm a home brewer, I'm going to open a brewery. And you'd have like this runway of, I don't know, a year to kind of like make your beer good. Nowadays, like your first release has better be like fire. Because you need that hype to survive now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just one of those things where, you know, even if you're good, even if your food is good, it's evolving. I'm sorry. I wish it weren't so. I wish it were easier. I'd rather take the easy route on this one, but this is what it is. The staff have to be more knowledgeable. You have to deliver an experience, not just a beer with some food that kind of sort of works well together. This is. You know, in a competitive beer environment, and like a lot of places, this is what isn't now necessary. Like it or not, it is what it is.
Yeah, so depending like what level of restaurant you are, you know, you really could. I mean, I went, so it's funny. I'm just going to circle back really briefly, but you talked about like the world's best pizza. One of those places featured on Chef's Table is here in Portland. And I went there with Anadeep. Mutyala was visiting me, that advanced cicerone you had on your show like a month or two ago, and we went to this pizza place. It's awesome. I mean, everything about it is fantastic, but you know, the beer selection was abysmal. The way it was served was abysmal. And that's really, really disappointing to go into a place like that and see that. I just expect every aspect of the business to get that same level of interest and treatment and high level. So it's because it always feels like beer is the thing that gets left out, right? And it's
absolutely
it's totally because they're like, hey, they don't make as much money from it. The margins aren't as good. They'd rather sell that bottle of wine. It's really frustrating because there are still going to be people like me who walk in, you know.
And from a business standpoint, I can't fault them and like, hey, we're going to make more money, more margin off this bottle of wine. So let's push the wine. You know, not going to argue that. But
I made way more money selling vodka sodas at Old Devil Moon than I made selling beer. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And I see the same thing. You have a fantastic restaurant, great service, great ambiance, great everything. The wine list is stellar. You have these beautiful cocktails that are unique and done by mixologists. And then you have the usual suspects of beer with maybe one Trappist option, just because, you know, just to make sure we appear high end, and we need to fix that. But so that's a great point. You have all these higher end restaurants that with a pathetic beer selection, because if the three of us go into that high end restaurant, we're probably not going to get a bottle of wine. We're probably asking about the beer selection. Oh, the beer selection sucks. All right, let's go to the next place. Forget this place. Let's go to the next place. And so offering that within reason is where I think the value in being an advanced cicerone comes in, and having that beer knowledge. So the real question I want to get in before we go too long is how can those of us certified cicerones, advanced cicerones, master cicerones, how can we add value, add education? How can we convince the world of beer and the world of food that we have value, that we can make things better through education, through experience? How do we increase that ability?
That was a tough question.
I'm looking for a tough answer. Got it?
For me, it's giving more, I think it's just giving more credence to like how good some of the beer these brewers are actually making, and honestly charging what it's actually worth. To me, that's a real problem. We're still in this, like, we really want beer to have the, like, we're the, you know, every person's beer, it's cheap, it's accessible. And some of the beer is that way. And so it should be priced accordingly. But if anybody's ever traded or God forbid, sold someone else's beer on the secondary market, I think people would be shocked how much people are willing to pay for a bottle of beer that they perceive to be, or is actually rare, or is from a good producer. I think people would be, I've told people and people are blown away. And this is not like, oh, like maybe they did. This is like, you know, there are places where you can, it shows that like, this is a sold listing for X amount of dollars. And I think people would be surprised. And I think sometimes obviously it's too much and people say beer should just never cost that much. And honestly, I totally disagree. I think there are beers that can be in your cellar, that can be in a cellar with your wine for years and years, and can even get better with age, and you can sell them for just more money than what people are selling them for. Like, well, I think that's the big problem. If it's the margins, then it's probably because you're selling a product for a price that's too cheap. You've probably devalued it.
A really funny example that just cropped up, I think it was last week, is they found a bunch of beer that was brewed for the coronation of, oh God, please forgive me, it was like King Henry IV or whatever, you know, one who abdicated the throne in early 1900s. They brewed all this beer. The coronation didn't happen, so they forgot about it, and they just found it. They just resurfaced it. They're trying to auction it off for a boatload of money, but they also add, we don't recommend you actually drink this. This is way too aged, but we're going to try and auction it off anyway. It's just we are following suit with the wine world, both to the good and bad end of it. But I think one of the things I want to add in there and see, have you guys chime in too, is one of the things I wrote in this article too, is just having, and you, Chris, you brought this up earlier, is you have your staff that knows more than your average customer. And if you have a customer that is knowledgeable, you can have an intelligent conversation. Or right. if someone comes in from, you know, visiting wherever you are from Cologne and like, oh, it should try Altbier. It's like, oh, I'm from Altbierland, you know, it's like, oh, yeah. great. I tell me more about Doppelstickas. I don't know much about Doppelstickas. And you can yeah. create that dialogue and that conversation with a guest just because your passion, your interest for learning. And then the soft skills of someone mm-hmm. who knows what they're talking about, they have a different mojo about them. You have a different, you talked about it, the culture, yeah. the energy, the vibe within
confidence.
The place. And that is, you can't put a number on that. You can't really measure it, but you can't measure love either. But I'm sure each one of you tell your spouse you love them, you know? So it's, how do you equate that into the value that we in the beer education world can bring to these places?
Yeah. I think the difficult thing about answering your questions, these last two questions, is that, you know, there aren't really in 2023, people want to like see some stats or something, right? You know, you want to yeah. see some, you want to actually know what's the ROI.
Show me the numbers.
Yeah. I think that is obviously difficult. But having there are so many ways that you can actually have real ROI when you have an educated person on staff. I mean, if you're running a draft system, for instance, right? Someone who just knows how to work the draft system properly can train the other people to do that as well, mm-hmm. Can keep it clean. I mean, you can save a ton of money from not wasting beer in just from that. And that's not even getting to the part where you're actually impressing customers who are going to become repeat customers and spread the word about you and build up your reputation, right? I mean, there's just so many ways that someone who's maybe even at least at the certified Cicerone level can start to change and build a culture at any fine establishment. So, you know, even if you're a restaurant that mostly focuses on wine, if you're also selling beer and you can bring someone like that on staff to run your beer program, that may or may not make sense. I don't know. Depends on the restaurant. But, you know, that I think is that's going to impress people that there is not this sort of failing in this one area, right? You're not weak in this one area. You're well-rounded. You're firing all cylinders, whether it's wine, whether it's beer, whether it's cocktails. A beer, you know, always gets kind of short shrift, and it goes back, honestly, it's kind of nuts, but it literally goes back to like Roman Empire era. Like they took over Europe and they were like, the barbarians drink this barley mm-hmm. Juice, you know, beer. Yeah. And we, the cultured people, drink wine. And that to this day affects like the way people think about beer as this like cheap everyman drink compared to wine, which is like for some reason fancy. And it's literally yeah. just like the greatest marketing campaign in history. It's
never
been
told.
Going on. Yeah. It's been going on for like, you know, 1,000 years. And I don't think we're going to change the culture around that. Right. I mean, that's a heavy lift. So I think we present beer in an amazing way that provides people with a great experience. And that is what we can do. And we can train the people around us to appreciate beer and to talk about, to be able to speak about it intelligently in a way that creates experience as well. And I think that just raises, you know, the tide for the entire beer industry, whether you're at a distributor or a brewery or a restaurant or whatever.
Well, one thing I would say to politely challenge that a little bit, or at least to kind of contribute, is you know, when we're talking about the cachet of wine, and beer doesn't quite have that. It's grown a lot in the last, you know, 40 years, and for sure. There is a bit of cachet with beer now. But what we're really talking about is the flavor and the experience, and you guys all know that. To find one of the best, quote unquote, best wines in the world, we'd have to pony up several thousand dollars. To get one of the best mm-hmm. beers in the world, we have to pony up a couple dozen dollars, you know? And not to say that, well, beer is obviously much lesser than wine is. No, we're talking flavor. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but the flavor in beer is far more expansive than the flavor of wine. And even wine people agree with me with that, on that. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about that, we're trying to deliver a flavor experience. We're trying to transport someone to something that they can't create. I had a great manager. I worked at an Italian restaurant years and years ago. And one of the things he said that stays with me today is people go out to eat for two reasons. One, to have an experience you cannot recreate at home. And two, to avoid doing the dishes.
Right.
When we talk about the former, people who want to go out, they want to spend the money. They want to have something that blows your mind. You don't have to spend several hundred dollars on just the two of you because you got that one bottle. You can have this incredible experience on a budget that makes more sense. And one of the fancy restaurant I worked at, we had this $60 steak that was just mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I brought in a whole case of Dogfish Head Santo Palomarón and pitched that with a steak, and it blew people's minds because they were expecting to throw down $100 for Camus. And I'd say, here, try this. And they're just like, oh my God, that was incredible. Yep. And it was what, $8 beer?
Right.
There's a way that we can do that, and we can educate, and we can create these experiences without blowing a ton of money on it.
Yeah. I mean, the Garrett Oliver kind of, he's never lost like a beer versus wine pairing kind of competition thing. I mean, we've all heard that. All of us at this level in the beer game, we all recognize that, you know, beer has a lot of flavors that, first of all, are more expansive than with wine, but also which tend to pair better with food because beer is made from a thing that is cooked, and you can pair with something that's balanced with bitterness or balanced with acidity. I mean, you have just so many options, you know, roasty, not roasty. And you just don't have that with wine. But for the general public, right, this is still a mind-blowing concept. It just barely computes for the general populace. So, that's another experience that you can really give folks at any restaurant or bar that you have a fairly expert person at.
Well, and I'm sorry, we are running a little bit long, so I want to be respectful of time. But Scott, I'm going to start with you. Before we start winding down with the questions you know are coming, one last thing I'm going to finish up. Tell us about Beer Scholar. What are you guys doing with Beer Scholar to help solve this problem of lower education and a mismatch of expectation and delivery on that experience that we're seeing in the industry?
We're just trying to educate people. I mean, that's at the end of the day, we are trying to get people to the levels where when they are hired. I think this is another thing maybe that, you know, we could have mentioned is that once you get people to the AC and the master level, it starts to become infectious. Like when they get around to other people and start talking about beer and the way that they're doing it and maybe serving things in glassware that people thought, you know, I didn't know you could drink beer out of a wine glass and that was, you know, appropriate for, you know, certain styles or something like that, you know, then all of a sudden you just start becoming infectious. And we're just trying to make sure that there's more of us because there's strength in numbers. And that's really, mm-hmm. I think, the biggest mm-hmm. thing that that we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got an online course for the certified beer server exam. That's like very affordable. I've got an online course for the certified Cicerone level, which is I'm selling here, but like truly is the most comprehensive course on the market. I've been doing this since 2014. And yeah, I think literally the majority of certified Cicerones out there have used it. The vast majority, because it's been around for over a decade. And so, yeah, you know, we're trying to bring that energy to the advanced level now and sort of demystify that exam and start training people up for that level, which is obviously it's a big leap, right? The people who have done the certified Cicerone exam know that it is a giant leap from certified beer server to certified Cicerone. And, you know, the AC, advanced Cicerone, organic leap. So,
yeah. And that sort of leads to, you know, talking about the coaching program that we're putting together. It is going to look really different from, you know, the previous two, you know, guides that Chris has put together, you know, because those two guides are pretty comprehensive. You know, they just pretty much go through the syllabus and you're going to learn everything you need to learn. And this is going to be a little bit different. It's more of sort of like we, you know, give you a schedule to kind of prepare for a 3-month boot camp. And then that boot camp is really making sure that you are getting to test all of the knowledge that you've studied. And then you're just getting tons of strategies and wisdom on, you know, how you're going to be able to approach the exam, things that you need to be doing on the exam that maybe aren't spelled out all that clearly in the syllabus, but we think are sort of, you know, freebie points or great ways to, you know, up your score. Because what we find a lot is that people who are passing are, if they would have just had a bad day on one tasting panel, they would have had to take it again. And we're just going to get you to a point where you're just, you can have a bad day on one essay or get an essay that you had no clue, but it doesn't matter because you just are padded in every single, was that your, I was like, oh, is that?
No, I had a couple essays that in retrospect, I look back and I did poorly on. I still passed the written, but I took a couple essays. I went back and was like, what the heck were you thinking? You know better. Yeah. Like, come on, man. Come on. And it's just, it was exhausting. It was intense. So I dropped the ball in that one question and it almost cost me, but it didn't.
And the thing about passing such a difficult test is, you know, not only do you need to know all the beer knowledge that they're asking you to learn, like on the syllabus, you need to also know how to approach the test. Like my sort of metaphor here is like, well, I'm an ex-attorney. Well, I guess I'm actually still an attorney. I'm a member of the Bar of the State of New York. And, you know, when you take the bar exam, they don't just give you a skimpy syllabus and then you kind of walk in and you're like, well, gee, I cross my fingers, hope I pass.
Yeah.
You know, you do like a training program, like a coaching program, and it lasts like a couple of months. And then you go in there well prepared because you know what the test looks like. You've gotten advice on how to approach the essays and all that. And then you know how to apply your knowledge to get a good score. And so that is what we aim to do with the Advanced Cicerone Coaching Program.
Yeah, perfect. Well, let's wind down and I love our discussion. I truly believe, especially if we had a beer in front of us, it would go for another hour because we're not going to solve this problem in one interview, unfortunately. So that first question is, you know, on two separate days, the two of you get to be kings of the beer world, right? And you guys know this question. So what's the first thing that you would like to change on your royal day? Chris, you go first.
Oh, geez. Okay. I don't know. If I was also like a wizard, I would like change people's perception of beer as you know, being that like thing that should be cheap, every man's drink, right? That would be that would be the thing I would love to just like magically, you know, do away with. I don't know if that's
so the first thing you do is make yourself a wizard.
Yes, right.
Right on. What about you, Scott? What's the first thing you would change on your royal day?
I think honestly, like what it's, I'm going to try and use something that I think would just broadly solve a lot of the problems that I specifically would want to change. And honestly, it would just be that everybody would become a certified beer server. If you just are passionate about beer in any way, if you like beer, to just become a certified beer server, because even if I'm in places where it's just with somebody who's very casual with beer and they're like, hey, I've got this great sour beer I want to share with you. And they pour the first half for themselves and then they pour the second half with all of the sediment and the yeast for me. And I look like I have a hazy IPA and they have a beautifully clear sour beer. From people who are casual, even to people who are running, homebrew shops that have a great tap list and they have bottle service, even they're doing it, and it's just a travesty. And so that's the first thing that I would do is make sure that that everybody does that. And then also that I think everybody should, I would also open up everybody's minds to try and open up everyone's mind to being more open to aging beer. I think there's too many people who honestly, people who just put it down they're like, oh, by the way, I stored all of it in a 90 degree closet for 5 years and none of it was good. And it's
it's in my garage, bro.
You never, you never gave it a chance. It's like, you know, and again, even then, these are from people like that was somebody who's a master Cicerone who said that. And they just like, they just totally like shat on aging beer. And then at the end of all of it, they're like, oh, by the way, this is how we stored it. That's like, well, of course. Like,
no,
you know, that's too bad. I want to say, I want to say one other thing that I would do if I was king of the beer world. You know, I think that one thing we could do obviously is broaden, like you always want to just broaden your audience. Right. And we just, I think the diversity and inclusion stuff is super important. So, you know, obviously it's an industry that kind of going back, mostly full of people that look like us. And I love that there's this great movement for greater diversity and inclusion. And I guess if I could wave my wand and do like a second miracle, it would be that cultural shift as well.
Cool. I think you guys would probably agree with this. I think the change I would make if I were king of the beer world is, you know, how some countries have mandatory military service. Well, I would make everyone has to work in a restaurant, bar, brewery, whatever it is for at least 1 year.
That's a good one. Mandatory
hospitality service. You will never crap on world. Your server again.
That would change the world. Would force everyone to, well, I think it would force
we'd be a lot nicer to each other.
Yeah. Totally.
Some people even more angry at the world. I don't know.
I don't know. Well,
who knows? Know,
that'll be the next thing I try and solve with my extreme benevolence.
Second wave of bond.
So I'm going to change a question for you guys because I know you guys have heard the podcast and you're probably expecting one thing. I'm going to go another just because it's fun and I can. With the advent of Space Force, now we have ambassadors going out into the universe, and we're sending 100 ambassadors to Mars to introduce beer culture to all the Martians who are their beer sucks and they want ours. But each ambassador is responsible for one beer style paired with one food item. And luckily, you two guys get first pick on the entire canon. What would be your pick to share with the world of Mars?
I'm going to pick like a totally obvious one that's just easy and I think really well known, but a lot of people haven't actually had it. And that is the Stilton blue cheese with barley wine. It's like so epic and so perfect a pairing.
100%.
No matter how creative and interesting I try to get with like coming up with other pairings, it's like almost like that one can never be beat.
That's a guaranteed way to see angels. I from my experience. Yeah. What about you? What about you, Scott?
With a lot of my experience being in cheese and chocolate pairing, I'm gonna bring one of each of those. I'm gonna bring Weissbier and goat cheese. That is one where every single one that I've that has like a perfect batting record. So there's no doubt, I'm bringing that. And then for chocolate, I am bringing, Lindeman's Frambois and white chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So love that.
Nice.
Those Lindemans, those people love to like poo poo those Lindemans, but man, they are so good for pairing. They're really good for pairing.
They are a fantastic tool for lots of kind of jobs.
I knew that I would bring that one when I had two former people who did a tasting with me, and they were friends. And for Christmas, they each got each other that as a gift by accident. They got each other Lindemans and white chocolate by accident. So they said, keep your gift.
This is the value that we advanced Cicerones bring to the world as we are blowing minds and making everything better.
That's right.
and granted, the big question is, why does good beer matter so much to you? Who wants to go first?
Good beer matters to me because I think that caring about things matters. I have a lot of family who are teachers, and there are just literally kids who are just being made fun of for being tryhards, for like caring about something and like giving a crap about something. And that's why I think good beer matters, because there are people who care about it, and it gives them a space to care about that thing so much that they want it to be the best thing that it can be. And that's why I think good things matter, because it gives people, or good beer matters specifically, because it gives people a space to care.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. Just being passionate about, like, picking something and being passionate about it. I just think that's so important. It's so weird. Like, I don't know. You occasionally meet people who just don't seem to have any, like, major passion interests. Mm-hmm. Anyway, for me, my original passion for beer and interest in it came from, like, A, sitting around with some old school beer people in San Francisco who were tasting me on, you know, I was already kind of into beer, but they were tasting me on stuff that was, like, really blowing my mind. This is sort of like, I guess, the earlier days of bourbon barrel aging stuff and of kind of doing more mixed fermentation stuff in the United States. And I was sitting around with, I think blessed is the right word. You know, I was sitting around with people like Pete Slosberg of Pete's Wicked Ale, Damian Fagan, who now owns, like, Almanac Beer Company. I just kind of found myself in this very lucky, I was just friends with this one dude, who Brian Yeager, who is a beer geek, who brought me into this circle, and I was very lucky. But the thing that really ignited my passion, other than just trying these beers and being like, holy crap, this is mind-blowing, these flavors, is getting into brewing. You know, that's when I, like, something about the that kind of what I saw at the time as this sort of science and art coming together in this beautiful way, really just piqued my interest. And I immediately decided I wanted to learn everything I could about making beer. And so getting into homebrewing and doing that for a bunch of years is what really started me on this path.
That was the first straightaway on what turned into a labyrinthine rabbit hole of beer that I fell heads into. But the long straight road that seemed benign in the beginning was homebrewing.
Yeah. Homebrewing is amazing, right? Because you're gonna end up with a community of people around you who also have that passion, right? And that is how you maintain an interest for a long time, right? You're not gonna, it's like playing an instrument or something. Like, if you're just playing an instrument in your own house by yourself all the time, mm-hmm. eventually you're gonna lose the interest. But yeah. If you are part of a group of other people who are also passionate and you guys are playing together, then it's going to be, you know, the fun will just continue.
I've experienced that. I totally agree. Last thing before we go, how can people find out more about Beer Scholar, take your classes, connect, whatever it is they need to do?
Yeah. TheBeerScholar.com. If you just Google Beer Scholar, you'll end up on my page, in about, let's see, what is it? June of 2023, in a little over a month, we'll be releasing a bunch of new information about that advanced Cicerone coaching program we were talking about, but training for level one and level two currently available at thebeerscholar.com.
And I will say, I am unbiased and objective because I don't work at Beer Scholar. I don't have anything to do with that. But as I was coming up, I was aware that Beer Scholar was always like the standard. If you want to pass this, then you go to Beer Scholar. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I started studying for Advanced Cicerone and asked people their advice, they said, oh, you should go over to Beer Scholar and see if I think they have an advanced thing. You didn't at the time. So I was kind of on my own, but I fell into this group, that had some meat and potatoes behind it. And now that group is partnered with you to create that Advanced Cicerone class. So I'm grateful for both of you and the work that you're doing. And I'm grateful that we may be a little bit ahead of our time as far as finding that value for advanced Cicerones, but I think it's there. The signs are there. My prediction is people in our line of work will just become even more valuable in years to come, but we need more of us. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing everything you're doing.
Yeah. Well, thank you for those kind words, and thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for
having us. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, good to see you too.
Cheers.
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 If you ask me, the models have been proven and the signs are there that better beer education is the path to better experiences and better revenue. Just like getting an advanced degree from a university, the diploma is not the end, but just the beginning of something better.
In the next episode, we head to South America to get educated on the culture and styles coming from Brazil with a beer sommelier. I'm on a virtual tour of the craft and culture of beer around the globe. I've put Good Beer Matters on video so I can take you along for the ride. If you know of a person, a place, or a beer story that needs to be told, let me know. Meanwhile, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let your world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.